Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. It is my pleasure to introduce to you someone. You've seen many of his Substacks and articles and videos on Soleri, James Rogowski, who was enjoying life in the natural health business and decided to look into what the WHO was up to, and is now literally the leading source in the world on what the WHO's up to. And our title today is, Who Do You Think You Are? Because if there's anyone who's brought the WHO to task and made it possible for the rest of us to try and do something about this, it's James Rogowski. So James, you are deeply in our debt and are doing great things. And it's such a pleasure to have you on the Soleri Report.
Well, the pleasure is mine, but let me push back on some of that praise, because I think that what I've done, anybody actually could do. Someone asked me, you know, what my credentials were. Am I a doctor? Am I a lawyer? And I said, well, my credentials are, I've read the documents. And you know, I know that's painful, okay? But, you know, they have a way, the WHO and all the affiliated organizations, they tell you exactly what they're doing. They keep a lot of stuff secret, but they put a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah.
Because they know it's painful to read the language that they use. I don't speak foreign languages very well, but I've learned how to translate their version of English into English that regular people understand, and it's frightening.
So I call it pretzel talk. Pretzel talk. Anyway, so I, in the process of preparing for this interview, I printed out about 1,000 pages of WHO pretzel talk, some of the links you recommended, and you know, it's quite remarkable. It's quite remarkable. So we're going to talk about what's really up here, the nuts and bolts of control and how this game works. So first of all, let's talk about three things briefly. Number one, who is the WHO? Number two, there are two processes underway. One is amendments to the WHO's, I guess you'd call it rules and regulations, and the other is a new treaty. So tell us a little bit about the WHO, tell us about the amendments, and then tell us about the treaty.
Well, it gets into an Abbott and Costello routine, you know, who's on first, all that sort of thing. You know, who is behind this? Who benefits from it? You know, who is responsible for all this?
Oh, but I mean the world. Tell us what the World Health Organization is, because not everybody knows.
Well, but that's the whole point, is the shtick with Abbott and Costello was someone's asking a question, but it's actually a declarative statement. You know, who is actually running the WHO keeps claiming that this is a member nation-led process, but they are really running the show. And who's running them, you know, remains to be seen. You know, officially, the WHO, you know, is a subsidiary body of the United Nations. Back in 1948, the United States did not sign a treaty. And I get into disagreements with many people, you know, in our movement about, you know, what is actually a treaty. When we got involved, it was a joint resolution of Congress, not a treaty, you know, by two-thirds advice and consent of the Senate. And so we agreed to adopt the WHO Constitution. Now, most people, you know, maybe they know the United States Constitution, but they are completely unaware of the details of the WHO Constitution. And so back in 1946, 47, 48, and afterwards when member nations joined, that Constitution sets the WHO up as, you know, the lead body for health, you know, around the world, and gives them the authority, according to their Constitution, if you accept it, the power to do whatever is necessary to achieve their goal. And it's quite frightening when you read it and you realize that you could read into that, you know, enormous power. And so what's going on with these negotiations stems out of Articles 19, 20, 21, 22, and 23 of that Constitution. Under Article 19, the WHO has the authority to negotiate a convention or an agreement. Doesn't say treaty, right? And a convention is frightening. We'll talk about that whenever you want. Under Articles 21 and 22, they can do regulations. And that's where the international health regulations were born in 1969. And Article 23 gives them the power to make recommendations. And so over the last 3-4 years, they've been making recommendations, some of them good, some of them not so good, but they have been misinterpreted as, you know, orders or commands or dictates or whatever you want to call it. But they don't really have the authority to mandate that nations do anything. But that's what these, you know, potential agreements could change. And that is not the direction that I want the world to go, that's for sure.
So the amendments are to the current documents, but there's a new treaty also underway, correct?
And again, it's a framework convention, which is unbelievably frightening. A framework convention would set up an unelected cabal of people that would be delegates from the nations that decide to participate.
And there are 192 potentially nations.
194 nations with two observer nations. And so it's all confusing. The United Nations has 193 members. They're not quite the same. There's 194 in the WHO. And so the conference of the parties that they seek to set up to control the framework convention would bring together whatever nations decide to participate. It literally names in who is funding this, the nations, the manufacturers of pandemic response products, the United Nations organizations, and all of the foundations like Bill and Melinda Gates and so forth. They would be members of the Conference of the Parties, an unelected cabal of bureaucrats that would then oversee this ongoing meetings, you know, year after year after year, the Conference of the Parties, who would be empowered to specify detailed protocols that we would have nothing to say
about. So the people who make the pandemic profits help govern and promote the institution that declares and creates pandemics.
I think we could stop right now, Catherine. We're done.
Yeah.
That's the problem. The conflict of interest, literally in the document, you can read Article 19, you turn the page to Article 20, the people who are putting in the money get to decide where that money goes and who receives it.
Well, but here's my understanding. The amendments make things bad. If the treaty should get adopted, it makes things worse. Is that fair to say?
Pretty much any action that they take, if they do more things, it usually gets worse. So,
but a treaty can't be adopted by the United States without a vote of the Senate.
Well, you know, there's rumblings that they're going to do something like the Paris Accords, you know, where it's an agreement that the executive branch, I don't know what the number is, but tens of thousands of agreements have been just signed off by the president.
Right.
And here's the thing, Catherine, what's in this document is not what people think is in this document. It is absolutely not what people think. And so the idea is, if they can get an agreement to funnel money and control how that money is funneled and make decisions on it's very much like the 1992 Framework Convention on Climate Change. This is not an attack on personal freedom and sovereignty and all that sort of stuff. That's in different documents. What's in the proposed Framework Convention is just a business deal. It's a venture capital prospectus. It's, hey, guys, we're doing business over here. You want to come and play?
So what I want to do today is I want to describe the train tracks of control. And because I think the train tracks of control are behind the scenes here. They're not running through the WHO. The WHO is it's a combination of different things, as it's, you know, if you look at all these proposals described, what they're proposing to do is to put out an infrastructure and a story with a tsunami of money and employment that will make it possible behind the scenes for the bankers and the central bankers to rig and control everything. And it's phenomenal when you look at it on an integrated basis. But if you want to understand it as a control mechanism, you need to see it on an integrated basis with the financial transaction controls that are coming into place that will be behind it. Okay,
are you bringing up the concept of follow the money?
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, this is a very clever combination of things. You know, it's the tsunami of money, but it's the story of I am good. I am here to help you. this is for your own good. This is whatever. And so you can't, you know, if the central bankers were to do everything with the financial line, they would get stopped. There are too many of us, too few of them, and it's too blatantly tyrannical. Here, you know, they can say they're protecting you from this invisible thing. So let's step through it, and then we'll come back to sort of the big picture. Because I think if you look at the most horrible scare stories out in the world knocking around about the WHO, you know, it really is worse than that. So
I agree. The front story is bad. It's a decoy. It gets your attention. But the backstory and the language, as I think you've maybe witnessed, though, you know, with the reading you're doing, the language is boring and sleep inducing. But then it wakes you up in a fright because you're like, oh, that's what they're really after. Oh, my goodness.
Right. It's quite remarkable. And as a case study in technocracy and how to implement technocracy, it's quite, you know, it's quite clever. And you're right. It's death-defyingly boring. Okay, so the one thing I would like to point out is, as far as I know, the Cook Islands and Liechtenstein are not in the WHO. They are not members of the WHO.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah, so if you have a chance of moving to Cook Islands or Liechtenstein, you might want to consider that now. But obviously not everybody can fit into those two places. Okay, so the first thing is, what you've got is an infrastructure that is in position to declare a invisible tiny thing, so we'll call it pathogens, but they're invisible to the naked eye, and no one in most communities can say that they exist or not, or that what the WHO says about them in your neighborhood is true or not, right? Because they're tiny and they're invisible and they're outside the general expertise, right?
It's the proverbial boogeyman, you know, the monster in the closet or under the bed that you're afraid of, sure.
Right. So you've created an infrastructure which is in charge of identifying, surveilling, controlling, warning, and protecting us from tiny little invisible things that we have no expertise to define or, you know, it's very difficult for us to prove the lie of the tiny invisible thing. And this is quite clever. Using tiny invisible things as the boogeyman really is quite clever, you must admit.
Well, you know, you have to have an enemy to point to make people fearful, and having an invisible threat, you know, is a very powerful thing. They used that, you know, with great expertise over the last 3 to 4 years. And while it may not have worked on you or I or your audience or a good percentage of the population, it actually, quite frankly, did work quite
well. On a lot of people.
And they're just saying, you know what, we got a good percentage of people. Let's strengthen that action. Let's call it by many nice sounding names. I'll rattle off a couple. One Health is connected to that. They want to set up a pathogen access benefit sharing system. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? They want to have a WHO run network of laboratories. You know, they want to invest in the core capacities of, you know, the infrastructure and have a whole of society, whole of government approach, you know, to preventing preparing for, recovering from, and responding to, you know, the next pandemic. But interestingly enough, they still have not been able, and they probably never will, because it suits their purposes. They don't even know how to define a pandemic. They had joint meetings a couple weeks ago, and they spent the better part of 2 days arguing about what is a pandemic. Now, that sounds like a picayune little detail, but, you know, the United States came up and said, oh, well, we think there should be a pandemic emergency. There's another term from the European Union that they put back in March, a pandemic situation. Okay. The point is, they want to be able to say, oh, it's an emergency. And here's how they're doing it. If they can find a genetic sequence that they claim is some dangerous pathogen with pandemic potential, they can claim that there's the potential for a pandemic. Therefore, they must take action, take that information, send it off to the central hub in Switzerland, create jabs and drugs, you know, to treat this potential pathogen, have the fear-mongering kick in and come in with their stormtroopers, quite frankly, you know, their medical team that even the HHS department has said, you know, that we are the boots on the ground when the army isn't welcome. And they come in. There's a movie out there. I don't know if you saw Sound of Freedom, but, you know, doctors can get to places where military people cannot and get into those nations to control them, jab them up. And
okay, well, you're getting ahead. So let me
claim to have solved the problem that didn't really exist.
I just want to step through the nuts and bolts of control. So the first thing is we're looking at a money spigot, a tsunami of money coming from a variety of places, most of which have a conflict of interest. So we're talking about jobs. This is a work program of global enormity. We're talking about grants. We're talking about purchases and contracts. You know, I would describe a lot of this as the equivalent of legal bribes, because they're telling you, you know something, instead of you having to pay back your debt, we will cancel some of your debt, you know, as part of this program. So if you play along, you know, we've got you in a debt trap and we'll get you out of the debt trap, you know, in exchange for you playing along with this. So, and then finally, you've got a huge amount of money going into expertise where I can say, okay, James, there's a pathogen in your basement and you can't prove there isn't, because I have 20, you know, PhDs on the payroll and you don't, right? So if you look at the jobs, if you look at the grants, if you look at the purchases of contracts, if you look at the debt relief, if you look at all these, what I would call legal bribes, and then the, you know, the huge money for your army of experts, you know, this is, first of all, it's a huge tsunami of money that is going to roll out. And it's coming from every country. Every taxpayer is having to pay for this.
It's already flowing. Last month, the World Bank's Pandemic Fund granted 19 proposals from 37 different countries to start doling out billions of dollars, which are running through the National Defense Authorization Act. Okay, so as part of our global health security agenda, we're already making the money flow. We, meaning the United States, we've pledged $1 billion a year into the pandemic fund, which is an intermediary fund, which gives money to organizations like the WHO and the African Development Bank and so forth and so on. And they take that money and farm it out to various nations. So there's 37 very relatively small, you know, low and middle income countries. Who did anybody get the notice? You know, earlier this year, they were accepting grant proposals. And about a month or so ago, they chose those grants. They've got many more applicants looking for money. And so, you know, it's pay to play.
I can't tell you how many times I came up with a local development solution and it was working. And then suddenly the critical people got hired away by a big government grant or a big government contract. You know, it just happened to show up, right? Nobody had to apply. Money here. Okay, so let's talk about the mechanics. So we've got 192 states potentially, so almost everyone. And what's interesting, and you're the guy who figured this out and pointed this out to me, they have an intersection at the national level, which is a national office. And I sent you the new announcement from the White House about the new executive branch office asking, okay, is that going to be essentially the pivot in the country? But then they define the ability to literally move down into local subdivisions within a country. And they're describing an ability to connect up directly, you know, through or around that national office all the way down to a neighborhood. So you're talking about who marching their experts into a particular neighborhood in Luxembourg and saying, the boogeyman invisible pathogen is here and we declare, you know, suddenly you can get the real estate price down to 10% of value so people can pick it up cheap. The real estate developers are going to have a field day with this. They're going to make a fortune, okay? This is going to be the short sellers. You know how much fun the short sellers are going to have with this? Do you have any idea? Because you can target, and I should step back. I haven't brought this up yet. But they are authorized to do proactive surveillance of the entire planet, one neighborhood at a time. So your sewer, your air, the WHO can be dropping experts in and claiming the boogeyman's in your sewer or your, you know, James, we found a, you know, we found the boogeyman in your, you know, in your septic tank. And so we have to shut you down.
In your pet's stool sample. Okay.
Right. You know, there
I mean,
you go.
I don't mean to be a fear monger. It's the last thing in the world I ever want to do is trigger fear in people. But okay, if you recall, they were talking about having, you know, digital surveillance. You know, you have some sort of geolocator app, and if you're in a building where somebody was sick, you know, you get pinged. Oh, you know, somebody was ill, and you were there, so you might be at risk. Well, you know, what if they did that with your pet? What right. What if? And this is not a what if. You know, what if samples are being taken from stools and, you know, nasal cavities or whatever in all veterinary offices around the world, and you happen to bring your pet into an office where somebody was pinged that, oh, you know, you tested positive on something that's not really a test. The idea behind the One Health concept is that surveillance is everything you could possibly imagine. Lift up every rock and see what kind right. of pathogen you can find. Mess with every armadillo because, you know, right. they have their own unique problems.
But
on and on.
But countries will be required to fund proactive surveillance of every place.
Correct.
This way. Right.
Right. Okay. And they call it core capacity. And it's part of the international health regulations. You got to get into Annex 1, and the amendments to Annex 1 of the international health regulations should be licensed as a sedative because they are as boring can be. And so all of the things that people are talking about right. you know, publicly in these negotiations may very well be a decoy that has been dropped off in these secret negotiations. And what's going to be left when they present it to the public is just going to put everybody right to sleep. And it's going to be, let's throw money into these core capacities to build out laboratory networks through a One Health approach to look everywhere under the sun. I spoke with someone who their child was in college in, I believe, North Dakota, and they were testing the wastewater leaving dormitories to determine whether or not they needed to lock down specific dormitories if they found some COVID in the poo. I mean, they have the level of sophisticated propaganda. It's not really science, it's propaganda to right. do exactly what you said. Oh, this neighborhood, you know, there's some polio in that neighborhood. Oh, watch the prices fall. Oh, let's buy right. up that, you know, now a lot of that is speculation. I don't get into speculation, literally.
I'm an investment banker. I'll speculate. Nobody builds a weapon without the intention of using it.
Right.
Okay. And what we're talking about doing is creating a standing army. We are financing a standing army that can drop into any neighborhood or any country or any place around the world. Now let's talk about some of the powers they want. They want healthcare mandates, including vaccination mandates. They want the ability mm-hmm. to require them. Mm-hmm. They want the ability to require, digital IDs and vaccine passports. They want the ability to quarantine anywhere in the world. So if they find a pathogen, you know, underneath your toilet, they can lock down your neighborhood. And to me, the chances that this won't be related to property confiscation or eminent domain or the control of real estate, you know, this is exactly the kind of control you need when you decide you want to dramatically reduce a population's economic footprint.
And, you know, tied in with the One Health approach, where it's a misguided belief, and I think they cook the numbers by merging in things like malaria. One of the latest things that they're talking about are diseases from arthropods, right? You know, ticks and mosquito, and, you know, all kinds of insects and so forth, where, yes, malaria is probably like the biggest killer of all time. And so they say, oh, the vast majority of ailments are zoonotic transfer. Well, yeah, maybe they're coming from Bill Gates's, you know, mosquitoes. The issue is they want everyone to be afraid of animals, separate out, you know, rural land and pack everybody into cities, which is really crazy because, you know, if anything, that is what is conducive to ill health. You know, being out in nature, being in touch with the world is how people would generally stay healthier. Their one health approach in people's minds psychologically, oh, I'm thinking about one's health. If their philosophy was to be concerned about the health of each individual person, they would be doing something totally different. But
well,
they
let's just step back
words.
And, yeah, let's just step back and explain what One Health is. So One Health is a program under the UN, which basically ties in animals and all living things. As one, you know, to me, that's what it means by One Health, which is all life is connected, and the health of any aspect of life impacts all the others. You know,
and therefore, they should have enough money to surveil every single aspect of it, get every single genomic sequence they possibly could, and control all of that information to save you from this boogeyman where, you know, whether it's a pangolin or an armadillo or a bat or whatever, be afraid, be very, very, very afraid, and throw a lot of money in their direction.
Okay, so hold that thought because I just want to come back to the money aspect again. Because we're trying to integrate health with money. And you have to look at this health game as part of a game which includes the money game. So we're trying to look at it on an integrated basis. For ever since World War II, we've created more and more paper, bonds, derivatives. We have this enormous paper bubble, right? So we have real things, and the paper has exponentially grown much faster than the real things, right? So now when the music stops, the big question is who gets the real things, right? So they don't want to have a negotiation of I have this much paper, therefore I get this many real things. They want to get all the real things and cut us out entirely, right? So it seems to me that the WHO combined with One Health is a very powerful piece of a juggernaut to make sure they get 100% of the real assets.
You will own nothing. They will own it all.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But they will only take, they will own and confiscate it because they're trying to protect you from the boogeyman under your toilet. Okay. So let me keep going. Control of the food supply is clearly part of this because One Health gets you into applying this game of pathogens to animals, the meat supply, the food supply, and the need to assert control of the food supply. Does that make sense? Is that what's going on?
I have an example. I can look out my window. I have a persimmon tree in my yard. It gives us about 800 persimmon a year. Okay.
Wow.
It's an amazing gift from nature. But the California, whatever department, maintains a fruit fly trap in my tree and my neighbor's tree and all that sort of stuff. And my understanding is, you know, relatively close to here, there's an area in lockdown because, you know, oh, if somebody comes by with a fruit fly that can cause some damage, you know, they'll lock this whole area down and fumigate it. Okay. Now, all right, I get it. You know, if there's a fruit fly that could devastate, you know, the industry here in California, monitoring that might make a little bit of sense. But that same idea could apply literally to a dormitory, to a neighborhood. It's like we're monitoring everything. Oh, there's one person there who maybe has some issue going on. Under this One Health approach, they are just looking at absolutely everything on the planet, as you said. And that would trigger this fear-mongering control mechanism,
right,
of we found a termite in the neighborhood, let's tent the entire town and poison it. Okay, it's that sort of idea that they're using all of this to transfer wealth and transfer control, right. And most of it, though, is actually found in a couple of amendments and a couple of articles where essentially, right, what they say is your local government, whether it's city, county, state, federal, whatever, they will be obligated to enact legislation to comply with whatever is agreed upon. And so it's not necessarily that the WHO is going to say to your, you have to do this. The word will come through back channels nice and quietly, and your local officials will get the word as to what it is they're supposed to do, because it'll come through a local, right, laboratory that, those people in and around wherever Catherine may be at the moment, they're getting a little uppity. Okay, we need to find a pathogen in that neighborhood. Let's lock down that neighborhood, right?
Well,
they're developing the capacity to be that specific if they really want to.
Okay, because remember, during my litigation, I was poisoned 8 times. So I know a lot about how this game is played. We, at the same time this is happening, we see a tsunami of money in the U.S. Congress being poured out on biodefense. Mm-hmm. And we know there are 300 plus labs, biowarfare labs around the world. So, and we know some of them, there's just a new big one built in Kansas for, mm-hmm, bio defense for animals. Okay, so what we've created is a global infrastructure of well-funded and well-expertized labs that can create tiny little pathogens that could be put under James's toilet, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's back to the old W.C. Fields, the snake and the snake potion.
Sure.
Right. So we've got a tsunami of money financing, the creation of snakes, and a tsunami of money now here to help protect you from the snakes, right?
Well, one of the things that I've been delving into just this past week in greater detail, because it's a little bit of a sticking point in the negotiations, it's the concept of a pathogen access and benefit sharing system. I think I actually have it right here. Page 21 of the document. The parties agree that the benefits, both monetary and monetary, arising from facilitating access to pathogens with pandemic potential shall be shared fairly and equitably. And so what they're talking about is,
right,
and if you think about how many people had something stuck up their nose, pretty much into their brain,
right,
and sent off somewhere, okay,
right,
you don't realize that your snot is valuable. If there's a genetic sequence on there that can be turned into money, how many billions of those swabs went somewhere to be analyzed by somebody? That is money. Sticking a swab up somebody's nose, sticking it in your dog's poop sample, sticking it into the bedding of your chicken coop to find, bird flu or your hog's pig pen, and find some swine flu, or in a septic system or your sewage treatment plant,
right,
or some wonderfully antibiotic resistant pathogen in your local hospital. That's where you find all the best stuff. That is a tangible product. There's a market for that product. That information is valuable. And the whole concept of it is being tied under the Biodiversity Convention, which is that, South Africa and Botswana, they identified Omicron, or so they say, right? And they let the world know about it, and certain companies turned up into boosters and made billions. And South Africa's going, hey, wait a minute, that's a national treasure. That's,
wow,
that's a valuable commodity. And so they want a pathogen access benefit sharing system that is based on equity. hey, you're in the equity markets, you know about financial equity. These people are not discussing health. We're dealing with what really should be, in my view, a World Trade Organization trade dispute. They want to govern the transport and control, transfer of intellectual property, which is what pathogen genetic, you know, information is.
Right.
That's
right.
intellectual right. property that they're arguing over who controls that.
Right.
So, all about money, power, and control. And so, well, hey, if we give you our path, if I give you my pathogen from under my toilet, okay, what's that worth to you if you turn that into a product that you make billions off of?
Right. Well, let me keep going because I'm still want to get to the next, you know, there's still a couple of parts of the train track. One of the reasons we know this has nothing to do with health is if you look at all the things we could do to dramatically improve health, we're not doing any of them. We're doing the opposite.
Clearly.
And yeah, so at some point when you are doing things that cause health to deteriorate and you keep doing them, it's because that's a plan. So
if you said you read the documents, when you read the international health regulations and you just go through the articles,
right?
If they were titled the International Surveillance Monitoring Reporting Emergency Declaring Fear-Mongering Control Regulations, you'd have a better understanding. By
right.
calling them health regulations, you're diverted. So yeah, you're absolutely right, Catherine. Nobody's talking about anything that regular people would consider health. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because a month ago, I'm like, what I really need to do is to talk to financial people because
right.
this is really just a contract, right? And the first, who should I talk to? Oh, Catherine Austin Fitz. So
well,
here we
this are. Is, I would describe this as a front because I'll tell you how the real power is going to go. Now, it's very clever. If you look at how they engineer coercing a country into doing not so things and destroying itself, you know, the country has the right to say, no, we're not going to do that. But then they have to report to the WHO and give them the reasons why they're not. And that's why having 20 PhDs who will make up anything you want on your payroll makes it very difficult for them to push back. So it's a bit of a game. But here's the thing to understand. If you look at how the line runs from the WHO to the national office and into the subdivisions, the municipality, the local area, the power here is not going to come through the WHO. The power is going to come because the central bank is going to say, you know something? We're going to freeze your bank accounts if you don't play ball. Or we're going to cut off your credit. You know, your swap lines are going to disappear, country in Africa, if you don't play ball. We're going to collect
rating,
that debt. Yeah,
your credit rating is going to go down a notch or something.
Right. We're going to demand that you pay that debt back. In other words, if you look at what the central bankers can do, you know, in that power line behind the scenes, totally invisibly. Because remember, you have invisible pathogens and then you have invisible finances, both invisible to the naked eye. Mm-hmm. And this is a dance of the invisible control mechanisms, you know, in a pincer movement. And it wouldn't work without the banks. The banks, you know, whether it's the World Bank, the IMF, the different central banks, the BIS, but if you look at the whole development financing and central bank mechanism and the banks with the invisible pathogens, it's the combination that gives you complete control. And you have to, when you read this, you have to see this as a dance between these two things. And I was laughing so hard I was crying because this is the cover story. The bankers could never do this without the invisible, you know, pathogens. Uh-huh. They need something so that they can give you a, this is the story of I am good. We're here to help you.
Right. And, you know, right. the media is enforcing the story. If you
right.
point out that, you know, well, wait a minute, that's not really what's going on. Nope. You got to stick to the party line. And so, you know, built into some of these documents are, you know, debt forgiveness, you know, that sort of thing. If you're getting grants, if you realize that there's 194 member nations and two observers, and some of those nations have the money to fund all of this that are being asked to donate, but each nation gets one vote. So China and India with 1.5 billion people, and you know, Nigeria and Indonesia and Brazil, right, and America with, you know, hundreds of millions of people all get one vote. But all the little teeny tiny island nations and African nations, Southeast Asia, South America, Central America, Caribbean, all that sort of stuff, those votes come cheap. Oh, right. Let's put a grant in here. Let's shift around a little bit of money. Let's, you know, approve or not approve a loan. You know, those nations.
That's what
know
happened. That's
how
happened
the game
with
is
Codex.
Played.
Right.
Yeah.
The little nations with the vote. Right.
They know who butters their bread. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay. So the question is, what can we do? Now, there was Merrill Nass reported, and I've tried to confirm it, but haven't been able to, that the Appropriations Committee in the United States zeroed out the WHO appropriation during the summer. Now, let's see what happens in the fall. Is there mm-hmm. truth to that?
Oh, there's definitely truth to that. It, you know, it's a process, right? And so at the point in the House Appropriations Committee, that is the case, and that's a wonderful development, but you know, mm-hmm. it's got to be approved by the Senate and not vetoed by Biden. So, you know, we're talking politics.
No, Biden can't put it back in if the Senate doesn't. Congress to pass the appropriation. Biden can't put it in on his own.
Understood, but you know, he could veto anything. And so the whole thing is a process, and mm-hmm. it's all intermingled with what's going on you know, in tandem with all of that. There's a document that is going to be agreed upon by the United Nations on September 20th, which nobody's paying attention to. All of these things are going to go into play. The amendments have to be submitted by mid-January. You know, May is coming along, and then we've got the November elections. And one of the saving graces happened last year where the negotiations got tough for the Biden administration, and it extended. They wanted to really shorten the approval process for the next round of amendments to the IHR, but it got extended to where next March 2025 would be the, I'm sorry, next March 2025 would be the deadline to reject any amendments.
So March 2024 or 2025?
If amendments are adopted in May of 2024,
okay,
it would be a 10-month period, which would bring you to March of 2025. That would be a period where each nation, including the United States, could reject the amendments. Right. And so that brings us into whomever may be in the next administration and the next Congress.
Right.
And so it didn't quite go exactly the way they wanted it to go in May of 2022. And so all of this gobbledygook, Meryl has given me the word gobbledygook, you call it pretzel talk. It all is meant to just make your head explode. And you know, what it really boils down to, in my view, is that when Congress joined the WHO and got involved in this, the authority shifted from Congress to the executive branch. Right. And so these unelected delegates make decisions, and it is crystal clear that the proposed amendments, which is where they're really hiding all of this stuff that we're talking about, does not come back to the Senate for authorization or advice and consent or anything. People have to realize that that is not how this works. If they adopt amendments in Geneva in May of 2024, there is no requirement for the Senate to give its advice and consent. It just rolls right into legally binding authority.
Well, but I would say that's not constitutional. The Senate has to vote on a treaty.
There's the difference, Catherine, between what should be.
Right. Now, I totally agree, because for example, the Senate, the House, and the executive branch adopted an administrative policy that said that they didn't have to comply with the Constitution on financial management. So there's one inversion after another, and I agree totally. But I would like to point out there are two constitutional violations. One is a treaty has to be voted on by the Senate. Now, if they choose to play inversion, you know, you and I have seen them do it before. But the other thing is the powers not delegated to the federal government under the Constitution are reserved to the states, which means a state does not have to comply under the Constitution, and the federal government, by agreeing with the WHO, can't overturn that.
And this is something that you said earlier that I wanted to comment on, so I'll do it now. There was an interview done with Javier Becerra, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services, about a month or so ago in Aspen. And they asked him a question. They said, you know, what would you like the United States people to know about the Department of Health and Human Services? First word out of his mouth was, well, the federal government doesn't have authority over healthcare. That's a state issue. Then he went on to say the quiet part. He said, but we do put an awful lot of money into Medicare and Medicaid, and so we have a lot of influence.
Right.
And so that's where the power is.
Exactly.
In the international health regulations back in 2007, the U.S. put in a reservation, and the federal government, through the mission to Geneva, said, you know, we're going to try to comply with this, but it's really up to the states. They
right.
know, but
right.
they know that they can influence it with money.
So the states, if you look at what's happened for the last 50 years in the United States and in the G7, there's been more and more effort for the central bankers to print money and create financial dependency at the state level. So, for example, right, what is happening in Tennessee right now is a very big debate where they are seriously considering to reject all federal education money so they can reassert control over the school curriculums and kick out a lot of the crazy business required by the feds. But that is exactly where it's going to come down to. Now, there are two things. The central bankers are printing money and sending money down to the states, but something else is happening. The states are sending a fortune in taxes back up to the federal government. And because the federal government is in violation of the laws related to financial management, the states, I believe, have the power under the Constitution to escrow all the tax money and offset it against what the feds are withholding. So the states have the power of creating common law right of offset using the tax money. So two
and,
can play
you know,
that game.
As when we started this conversation, you know, follow the money and realize that there's a difference between power and lawful authority.
Right.
And so the amount of money that they want to flow, the WHO wants to flow into this, their yearly budget is last in 2022, they spent $3.8 billion. In the grand scheme of things, that's a pittance these days.
That's a pittance compared to what they're planning on coming up in this document.
Right.
They are planning, this is going to be huge money.
Yes.
Huge money.
They want, you know, billions upon billions of dollars. And its goal, as you said earlier, it's really got nothing to do with anything anybody would consider about health. They're not talking to doctors who figured out COVID and saved lives. They're not talking, you know, to anybody who's been analyzing the horrors over the past 4 years. This is a financial investment package.
Right. So let's look at the BIS. The BIS just announced they're putting together a unified ledger of all the assets on the planet. Right? Okay. So if we look at this as a money game, this is an infrastructure as the unified ledger produces a shopping list. This is an infrastructure that helps the central bankers go shopping and picking up, you know, they're going to ply out and pick out all the assets. It's amazing.
What's a couple of quadrillion dollars amongst friends?
Well, but the money at play here is not what is in their databases. It's in the unified ledger of the BIS. And what they're putting together is a standing army that can invade anywhere at any time and basically take any assets that we own, drive them down to a value of zero, and make it possible for the other guys to get them.
Absolutely.
I would describe this first and foremost as a real estate play.
Well, this is, you know, racketeering, corruption, you know, theft with a pretty little face about, oh, you know, we're just here to prevent the next pandemic.
We're here to help you.
Yeah, we're here to help you.
We're here to help you. What could possibly go wrong?
And so, you know, the media does a very good job of distracting you with this and distracting you with that. And even when, you know, the WHO is having these meetings, it, again, it's all a decoy. It's all a distraction. It's right. real. You know, there's a reality. It's a tangible reality. They're doing what they're doing. But interestingly enough, whether you're talking about the preparedness, you know, things that they're talking about, the global digital health certification network, which most people call a vaccine passport, or the laboratory networks that they're talking about building out, they're just building it. You know, normally you would think, oh, well, we're having negotiations, we're discussing, what are we doing, what are we planning on doing? After you agree to something, then you go, no, they're building it now because they know exactly where these negotiations are headed. It's a big use of the Delphi technique. They're making people believe that, oh, you have, you know, a little bit of say in the matter, we're negotiating. But then they're spending billions of dollars now building out the systems that they're negotiating. They're operationalizing equity.
And I want to bring in a piece. You know, we have a very significant lawsuit, Missouri versus Biden, that's mm-hmm. being litigated on free speech issues. Mm-hmm. And a portion of the Department of Homeland Security took the position that our minds are part of the critical infrastructure, therefore they have jurisdiction.
Wow.
Okay. So when you look at the critical infrastructure that WHO and this group will have jurisdiction over, you know, it includes your mind. So mind control is, you know, is in the mix. So we have, it's impossible to understand when you read this 1,000 pages, and God knows how many more 1,000 pages you've read, James. But when you read it, what you realize is we have the money, we have the bankers here, we have the WHO and this invading army here. And then, of course, we have the media backing them up with the fear mongering and keeping this all secret, right? Uh-huh, uh-huh. And you have to look at it whole. You have to look at it as an integrated picture, which is why when I read this, I don't know, I was halfway through the 1,000 pages, I just started laughing. And I said, James is absolutely right. This is a money game. It's a tsunami of money. That's what this is.
When the light bulb goes off, usually people make an audible noise. They're like, or, oh, you know, I guess, it, you know, you chuckled or laughed or whatever. It is impressive. You know,
it's very impressive.
Right. That they're doing such a good job of hiding it. It's not an easy task to look out and say, you know, what is it that we do to stop this? Well, you know, step number one is always, if you don't know what's going on, you're not going to be able to stop it. You're going to be pushing on the wrong button. You know, whack-a-mole is one thing. You know, you try this, you try that, you try the other thing. But the deception is so powerful that people on our side, if you want to put it that way, are pushing back at this and pushing back at that and pushing back. But you've got to realize what it is that you're really pushing against. And it's a play to take over the assets of the world.
It's a coup. It's a global coup.
It's a global coup. Yeah.
Yeah.
They want the whole world.
And they do.
They would prefer that everybody just voluntarily give it up. Right. Give up your personal sovereignty, give up your bodily autonomy, you know, give up your right to travel, give up your right to, you know, decide what's good or not good for your health, give up your right to property, give up your right to this, that, and the other thing. And it really starts with individual people understanding what, you know, you're passing on and standing up saying, no, I see what you're doing. You're attempting to steal from me that which is rightfully mine. And no, I will not permit it. And if we come together, we can stop it, but we have to understand it first.
Well, the first thing I think we can do is we can ask our political leaders to exit the WHO. So I think it's perfectly possible that you could get Congress before this is over to exit the WHO. So that's number one. You can get them to slash appropriations. I mean, it's mm-hmm. even more effective to zero out the appropriations than to exit the WHO. So, because this is a money game. So you can do those two things. You can turn up the transparency, which is what you've been doing. Mm-hmm. But there's another thing you can do. Anybody who's helping to do any of this, you can start to treat, you can shun them. One of the greatest political powers in the world is shunning people. You know, shun anybody who supports this. Shun anybody who does this. You know, you got a friend who's working for the WHO. you know, delete them from your Rolodex, for God's sake. No, it's got to become really, really, if your business is engineering a global cool, you know, we've got to make you unfashionable. It's got to be unfashionable to destroy human liberty. Sorry. Anyway, so those are some of the things you can do, but it is that simple. There's and the other thing you can do is, for God's sakes, protect the First and Second Amendment. And I would throw in, I think your state legislators can do a huge amount, as can the AGs. If you look at what the AGs can do in the courts and what the state legislators can do, they have the power, particularly if they're willing to walk on the federal money, which I think is going to happen, especially if they're willing to grab the taxes. So I just see many pathways, particularly in the United States. I think it's much easier for a state in the United States or a state official to fight this than it is for a national government in the EU. But I just think this is a fight for all the marbles. You can't go along with this.
You know, I've always given everyone my phone number every time I do an interview. I'm gonna do it again now. My phone number is 310-619-3055. You mentioned Liechtenstein. I actually got a call from someone in Liechtenstein. They're actively pushing back on this. I've recently been working with folks in Trinidad and Tobago. They're pushing back on this. There are dozens of
there are people all over the world,
over the world who are aware of this. I encourage people to call me because the details are mind-boggling. But my background in natural health points to a very simple thing. What most everybody is talking about are the symptoms of the problem.
Right.
And you can push back on the symptoms all you want, but they keep coming back because you have to address the cause. And the cause is actually quite simple. If you allow some other entity to dictate what you can or cannot do, you're going to have problems eventually. Now, whether it's in what you do for your health or what you do for your wealth, if control is continually centralized into the hands of bureaucrats in Geneva or Basel or, you know, DC or Sacramento or wherever it may be, they're not going to be able to optimally run your life for your benefit. I have a very simple question for anybody regarding health and their choice of healthcare provider. Who profits when you're healthy? Okay. You and maybe your family, right? Everyone else makes money off of your dis-ease. Okay.
Right.
And so if you take that into any situation, you know, who profits when you put money into the bank? Well, you think you might make, you know, half a little percent here or there, but, you know, you giving your money over to a bank enables them to make far more profit off of you than you could even begin to realize. And so it's,
I don't know. I have a great bank. I love my bank. So
it's centralization of control that is
the
cause of all of these problems.
What the ultimate solution to the WHO problem is true monetary reform. Mm-hmm. That is the ultimate solution. And a non-secret, you know, a transparent governance system on planet Earth, you know, out with the secrecy. Now, I want you to describe your Substack because I'm just going to make a pitch here. I think one thing people can do, I've never seen anybody, if you look at return on invested dollar, for donating to James Rogowski, it's one of the best investments you can make because what you can do with a dollar, it's a, you know, in the movie, Patton Bradley says, give George a headline and he's good for another 60 miles. So what you can do with a little bit of donations, James, is just something that's marvelous to watch. And Soleri has been a donor to your efforts. And I really encourage everybody, if you want to stop the WHO, go to James Rogowski and make a donation. Because you are doing marvelous work. This is mind-boggling information to work through and bring it down to the, you know, to the, I mean, I can't tell you, if I had had to do this without you, you know, it would have been hundreds of hours. So you've made it accessible to lots of people in the media. It's been a wonderful, I mean, I can't tell you what a great service you've done. So I would really ask the Soleri Report subscribers, go sign up for James's Substack. It's really, really good. He keeps you notified of anything you need to know, and make a donation because it's a great investment. You know, I always say, what's the point of having assets if you don't have an army protecting them? And as far as I'm concerned, you're the Marines, you know.
Well, I've been accused of being Paul Revere, you know, just shouting from the rooftops of what's going. Uh-huh. You know, part of this comes from, and thank you so very much for that. I greatly appreciate it. Part of this comes from an argument that I had with a station manager at a local television station 30 years ago. I was advocating that the TV station should have like a calendar of events that were coming up, things like, you know, a city council meeting, school board meeting, rather than report what had happened after the fact. And you watch it and you go, oh, darn, I missed it. I didn't know it was coming. I got into an argument and he pulled me aside and gave me the biggest red pill of my life. He whispered in my ear, he said, let me help you out, kiddo. You don't understand. We don't give an F about our viewers. Our advertisers pay the bills around here. Right. And so part of what I've been trying to do is tell people, as soon as I can find out about something, here's what they're planning on doing, right, so that you can be involved. You can take action. Nobody can do this alone. But right. Typically what you get from the news is, oh, you just missed it. Too bad. Time's up.
We want the news while there's still time to do something about it. And there is still time to do something about this.
Absolutely.
There is still, because if we allow this to happen 2 to 3 years from now, you just would not believe what's going to happen in your neighborhood.
Right. Yep. And so they operate on something called the silence procedure. And essentially, they say, look, here's what we're going to do. If you object, go ahead, speak up. But they don't promote it. They don't, like, you know, send you a notification on your phone or email or whatever. And so the act of being silent is seen as an act of consent.
Right.
And if you don't know about something, you're unaware. I get it. You know, there's a lot of things going on in the world. There's plenty that I'm not aware of. But the responsibility shifts after you've been made aware. If you ignore that which you are now aware, then you become ignorant. And I've always pronounced that word differently. Doesn't mean you're stupid. It means you look at something and you choose to ignore it. Well, right. Please don't be ignorant about what the WHO is doing, because they are trying to dramatically change the entire control structure of the world, and they've got you in their sights.
And your assets.
And your assets.
Children. And your children.
And your grandchildren and your pet, right, and every other aspect of it. So, right. You know, I have every intention of living for quite a long time. And I don't want to live in the world that they're planning, right?
Right.
I want to live in a better world. I want to work with people who have ideas about how they want the world to be, financially, health, education, you know, everything and so forth. So I encourage people to reach out and give me a call. I take feedback from everybody. I think I practice the scientific method. If you've seen anything that I've done and you have a better suggestion or you think I'm wrong about something, I want to know. I want to be able to take that information and put it out to a bigger audience. And you know, thank you for sharing some of my stuff. Certainly don't know everything, but I'm doing everything I can
to
translate their stuff.
If you look at the gist of what these guys are up to, I think you've got their number figured. Okay, well, James Rogowski, always a pleasure. We're in cahoots, and I look forward to many more great adventures on the pathway to freedom.
Thank you
a wonderful day.
You too.